What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Kruger, spicing new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back with another fantastic UFC event. UFC Qatar goes down this weekend. Very unique event, I might say. UFC Qatar, first time over in the city of Doha, Qatar. It's going to be exciting. A lot of fun fights on deck. And we have predictions for every single matchup, so I'm looking forward to that. Also, we're going to be dropping our NFL week. What are we on now? 11? Week 11 quick picks? I mean, it's crazy how fast the season flies by. Actually, I can double check here. Week 8, week 9, week 11. Oh, actually, we're going into week number 12 here. Wowza. And yeah, the Texans and Bills are currently in a battle. I'm going to pick the Bills in that. I'll just let you know right now. It's at halftime. I was going to pick the Bills anyways. I am also noticing on my laptop, just to give you guys live updates, that apparently my storage is full, so that is certainly an issue or concerning. But yes, on today's episode, we will be dropping our UFC Qatar official predictions and our NFL Week 12 quick picks. But yeah, I've just been super busy. It's currently 8:51 at night. I have to go to bed at 10, so I have like no time. Like I said, if you've been keeping up, I work like an absolute maniac, so it is about time that I get this podcast up and loaded. It was good to do it last night, and I literally fell asleep right after dinner. So without further ado, let's dive into everything. And the one thing that we do have to go over is the updated UFC rankings. Big updates to the UFC rankings. So let's talk about it. Of course, following UFC 322, a lot of updates happened. Going to the women's divisions, no changes in women's bantamweight or women's flyweight. But for women's strawweight, for some reason, Zhang Weili drops down from being tied with Tatiana Suarez for being ranked number one to now being ranked number two. It makes no sense. Zhang Weili mopped the floor with Tatiana Suarez earlier in the year, and now she's ranked two. It really does not make any sense. I don't really get the idea behind that, but okay, I guess. Also down there, Fatima Klein goes from unranked to ranked number 12, following her victory over Angela Hill. Angela Hill drops two spots down to 14. Alexia Thanera drops down to 15. And I believe they booted Tisha Pennington, as she should be, from the women's rankings. But yeah, don't really know why Zhang Weili is ranked at number two, being that she will be the next person to fight Mackenzie Dern. Very odd. Moving into the women's pound for pound, Kayla Harrison actually passes Zhang Weili from being ranked number three to being ranked number two. In all reality, I think Kayla Harrison would be any other woman currently in the UFC right now. So honestly, it would make sense more if she was ranked number one pound for pound, but Valentina is still the number one pound for pound female. Mackenzie Dern moves up to five and Manfiora drops down to six. Makes sense because Mackenzie Dern is a champion. Erin Blanchfield, following her victory, jumps two spots to seven. Alexa Grasso drops down to eight. Julia Pena drops down to nine. And Vera Jandidova passes Hakuel Pennington from 10 to 11. Of course, the women's pound for pound makes absolutely no sense. If you ever think the men's doesn't make a lot of sense, just go and look at the women's and just realize that it makes utterly no sense. Like, imagine that the number 15 pound for pound woman on the planet right now is Norma Dumont. Compare that to the men's, which is Charles Oliveira. That tells you all you need to know. Moving into the men's heavyweight division, no new changes, but we're going to be bringing this up later on our predictions. Number six ranked Waldo Cortez Acosta is stepping in on short notice to fight Shamil Gaziev, who is five spots below him, who was supposed to fight Sergey Spivak. Absolutely crazy. Waldo Cortez Acosta, you dog. I am so excited to see that. Light heavyweight division, no new changes there. We do await Alonzo Menifield to take on Volkan Ozdemir and for Blachowicz to take on, Bogdan Guskov. Those are really the only two big light heavyweight matchups. Other than that, the division is settling. I do believe they announced that maybe Nikita Krylov has a fight coming up with someone unranked. I can't recall, but I do believe they're setting him up for a big fight. Middleweight division, Gregory Rodriguez in the rankings. Finally, this man has been trying to get in the rankings forever. He comes in at 15. I don't even know who they removed. I think they removed Joe Pyfer, which I find just utterly hilarious. But yeah, Gregory Rodriguez in at 15. I think the next opponents for him, Roman Dolidze at 12, Paulo Costa at 13. Those are two excellent options. Next up, welterweight division, which is insane. Welterweight division is utterly insane. So we're going to go bottom to top. So down at the bottom, Daniel Rodriguez drops down to 15. Jeff Neal drops down to 14. Colby Covington drops two spots to 13. Still crazy he's in the rankings. Gilbert Burn remains at 12. Gabriel Bonfim is ranked at 11 now. Joaquin Buckley drops three spots to 10. Leon Edwards, following his defeat, drops five spots to 9. Kamaru Usman drops three spots from being ranked number 5 to being ranked number 8. Sean Brady goes from being ranked number 2 to now being ranked number 7. Ian Garry stays at 6. And your new top 5 is Carlos Prates at 5, Shavkat Rakhmonov at 4, Michael Morales at 3, Bilal Muhammad at 2, JDM at 1, and Islam Makhachev is your new men's welterweight champion. I mean, crazy. Just crazy. The top 5 before this UFC 322 happened was Bilal Muhammad at 1, Sean Brady at 2, Shavkat Rakhmonov at 3, Leon Edwards at 4, and Kamaru Usman at 5. And now Prates has jumped Ian Garry. Shavkat's still in the top 5. Michael Morales goes from 8 to 3. And Bilal Muhammad still at 2. JDM now at 1. So what happens here? What happens now? Well, now we await to see what happens between Bilal Muhammad and Ian Garry. That's kind of the final big matchup of the year for the welterweight division. We'll see what takes place there. You're going to have to find my prediction later on the pod, but I am leaning towards a certain someone just based on personal preference for the fighter. And it's going to be crazy. It really is. I think JDM is definitely going to be in a fight with a Carlos Prates. I think Carlos Prates versus JDM is just such a beautiful fight to not make. Michael Morales really, I feel, deserves to be the next title challenger. I could also see Michael Morales fighting the winner of this matchup between Ian Garry and Bilal Muhammad we're going to talk about. And as for Shavkat, man, I mean, it's just so tricky what to do. You know, it really is tricky what to do with him. I'd even say Shavkat versus Kamaru Usman, I would like, but it's real telltale here that Kamaru Usman has dropped down to 8. He will be nowhere near a title picture in his next matchup. Lightweight division also has massive changes. Everyone kind of gets a big boost following the departure of Islam Makhachev, who was ranked at number 1. Ignacio Bahomanes joins the rankings at 15. Benil Dariush drops 3 spots to 12. And Benoit Saint-Denis jumps 5 spots from 13 to being ranked number 8. I absolutely love it. He'll be fighting upwards next. I really like a Matheus Gamrot fight or the loser of Dan Hooker and Armin Tsarukyan. Dare I even say Charles Oliveira? I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. Benoit Saint-Denis, one of my favorite fighters on the roster in the UFC, and I'm happy to see it. So, yeah, Armin Tsarukyan ranked at number 1, Dan Hooker at 6. They are your two men in the main event this weekend at UFC Qatar. Pretty crazy that Charles Oliveira at 2, Max Holloway at 3, Justin Gaethje at 4, still in the top 5 after all this time. And very weird, Paddy Pimblett's ranked at number 5. Just crazy how they've kind of sneakily snuck him up the rankings there. For featherweight and bantamweight, no new changes. In terms of big fights even, I mean, I don't even know if there's any big fights for either of those divisions to round out the year. I know Arnold Allen ranked number 6 at featherweight is doing everything he can to get a fight. No one will end up really fighting him. And yeah, kind of both of those divisions had simmered out for the remainder of the year. Flyweight has some new changes as Kaikara France taking a year absence from MMA, willingly departs the rankings. Manel Kate moves up to 6, Alex Perez to 7, Asuma Mabayev, who fights this weekend, moves up to 8, actually Perez does 2, Tim Elliott to 9, Sefer Sig to 10, Tagir Limbekov to 11, Charles Johnson to 12, Bruno Silva to 13, Joseph Morales, new entry to 14, and Rafael Estevam officially rejoins at 15. And then the last updates we have, men's pound for pound, Tom Aspinall passes JDM, being that he is still a champion and JDM isn't, and Islam Makhachev passes Iatopira from number 2 to number 1. Makes sense. Islam and Ia are just going to flip-flop for eternity until they end up fighting, and I have no issue with it because Islam just tied the longest winning streak in UFC history with Anderson Silva. He warrants being ranked number 1 pound for pound. Be it was it the most entertaining performance, you know, not much. It was dominating. It was impressive. It just wasn't really entertaining. But yeah, Islam Makhachev, top dog around campus. Next big fights we have coming up, of course, Dan Hooker and Armin Tsarukyan we're going to talk about. In terms of the next big pay-per-view, you're getting a bantamweight title fight. You're getting a flyweight title fight. You get a lot of fun stuff to end the year. But year's just getting going in terms of the NFL. Or actually, I should say the NFL is just about halfway over, which is kind of sad to think about. It just goes by so quick. But honestly, this NFL year, I'm just not that invested. You know, I'm kind of just like coming to this realization, and this has happened with UFC too. I'm trying not to lose this with the UFC. It's like when the Vikings lose or if my fantasy football team loses, like it really shouldn't have any effect on me. And once I kind of came to that realization, I've just kind of lost somewhat interest. You know, obviously not doing too hot in fantasy this year, kind of mediocre in all aspects for my 6 leagues, which this is 6 leagues is just, it's not even fun. it's not even fun. Like, yeah, I have a lot more opportunities to win, but it's just kind of feels like a chore. And then I'm like, I miss something. I'm like, oh, why didn't I start that player? Oh, maybe because I have six freaking leagues to manage. So we'll do some NFL Week 12 quick picks here. Pretty fast, pretty rudimentary. I mean, like I said, Texans are beating the Bills right now at halftime. I still got the Bills winning that. I do believe Josh Allen got injured, though, so not very good. But I am going to pick the Bills there. Colts and Chiefs going down Sunday. That's going to be a great matchup. Colts are coming off a bye week. They're 8-2. They're 2-2 on the road, which is where they have lost, and that's where I really like the Chiefs odds here, who have lost two straight, but I really feel like the Chiefs are just kind of on the wrong end of things. I mean, their losses, Jaguars, Bills, Broncos, Eagles, Chargers, they're just not bad losses. They really aren't. And I still think Kansas City at home is going to be a tough matchup. And I do think Colts coming off a bye. Chiefs have been firing for a while. I am going to ride with the Chiefs to win. But I really like the Colts. I love the Colts, Broncos, and Patriots this year. I love when new teams come out. And, you know, it's not the Chiefs and Bills every single year. So, going to go with the Chiefs in this one. But if the Colts win, I will not be angry in the slightest. Next up, Seahawks and Titans. There just really isn't even an analysis to do. You know, Seahawks over the Titans all day. It would be awesome for the Titans to pull off an upset, but in terms of the rest of the Titans schedule, I mean, I don't know what to say. They're 1-9. They're really a bad team. Jaguars, November 30th, I like their odds there. Browns, December 7th, I like that. They also have the Saints on the 28th, but I mean, it's going to be a tough, tough year for the Titans to get any form of victory again. So all I can do is wish them luck. But the Seahawks, I mean, I'm a big JSN guy. Absolutely love Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And this is a good Seahawks team. People are sleeping on the Seahawks team for sure. They're coming in 7-3. They did lose, but they lost to the Rams. Okay, let's not act like that isn't a bad loss, all right? Next up, moving along on our noon slate here of games, if my screen will load. I am still troubled by the fact that I may be out of storage, so I really hope if you're listening, when you listen to this, you'll know I finally got storage, but if I have to pay, that's just baloney. Vikings and Packers. Oh, my Minnesota Vikings. They suck. They suck. There's nothing more to say. They're not a good team. They're not a good team this year. Packers are a good team. Just for the sake of maybe the Vikings winning, I'm going to pick the Packers. Why? Because I'll pick the Packers, and it's either Packers win, I get my pick right, or Vikings win, and I'm happy. No in between. Next up, Jets and Ravens. I actually just traded away Lamar in my fantasy league because my season's over. And to be honest, I don't really care. We don't even have a punishment this year. The punishment is the loser pays for the winner's buy-in. So you basically just give the winner $40. Like, I don't actually think I'm going to lose the league. But, yeah, still going to go with the Ravens here. Jets are really bad. Jets are just, oh, Justin Fields' time in the NFL draws to an end, and it kind of breaks my heart. It really does. So I am going to go with the Ravens here. Not that hard of a pick. Giants and Lions next up. I do absolutely love that Jameis Winston was in against the Packers. Didn't help, though. Giants are still the Giants. Still can't win a game to save their lives, and the Lions are an absolute powerhouse. Give me the Lions over the Giants. Next up, Bears and Steelers. I don't know. You know, I feel like this is a winnable game for the Bears, but it also strikes me as that the Steelers are just always such a 500 team. They're 500 every year, every time they play. And currently, they're sitting at 6-4. They've gone 2-2 on the road, 4-2 at home, so not really a clear pattern. And the Bears have just been escaping with wins left, right, and center. The luck's going to run out eventually, so I am going to go with the Steelers to win this contest. Next up, Patriots and Bengals. Barring any shocking upset, Patriots should demolish the Bengals, but you never really know. Trevion Henderson is breaking out, but with the return of, who is it, Ramondre Stevenson, they might run him up. But as of right now, Drake May is killing it. He's the number one fantasy QB. Who saw that coming? And this team is a well-oiled machine. And for the Bengals, they're a machine falling apart. They also don't have Jamar Chase, so they are literally cooked. They might as well just turn their team name into the Scaredy Tigers. I don't freaking know. We're easily going with the Patriots all day. With that, we get into some noon games here. Browns and Raiders. Talk about an awful matchup. I mean, I trade away Ashton Jeanty as well in that Lamar trade. Did get Quashawn Judkins and Breece Hall just because I want to get new players on my team. So, going to be rooting for the Browns here with Quashawn Judkins. For some reason, I took Ashton Jeanty with like my number one like draft pick in round one, not the actual number one pick, but my round one draft pick, because I'm a literal troll. So that has really worked against me this year in my main fantasy league, but hey, it is what it is. Gonna go with the Browns over the Raiders. Shedeur Sanders is starting, and I'm really hoping that he wins, because a lot of people are haters on Shedeur, and I think it would be very awesome to see him succeed, because, you know, I think when people just love hate on players, it makes no sense. Like, I hate on J.J. McCarthy, and if he ends up succeeding, like, good for him, but, you know, Shedeur is literally, like, daddy's boy. Like, this is nepotism getting into the NFL. He needs to prove in this game that he belongs, and we'll see if he can against the Raiders team, which is awful. Like, legit, this Raiders team is atrocious. Next 3 o'clock game, Jaguars and Cardinals. Very tricky matchup here. This is a Jags team that'll go out and beat the Bills and beat the Chiefs, and we'll just say beat the Eagles. Then they'll go and lose to the Saints, or they're going out there and losing to the Browns or something. You know, they're just such a random team, and this Cardinals team just can't win a game to save their lives. I really do like the Cardinals odds here, but I'm going to say that this Jaguars team continues to win and gets it done. Next up might be America's game of the week, Eagles and Cowboys. If there's ever been a game the Eagles are going to lose, it's this one, but am I going to predict that? No, I'm going to predict the Eagles to win every game for the rest of the year because it's just a safe pick to go with. So Eagles over the Cowboys. It is in Dallas, though, so watch that one. Final 3:30 game, Falcons and Saints. Such a winnable game for the Saints, but it's also a must-win game for the Falcons because they just haven't won. They've lost like the last five games. It makes no sense. I think overall this Falcons team is better. I will be rooting for Juwan Johnson, I believe his name is, tight end for the Saints. Other than that, like, I have to go with the Falcons here. Falcons blow out the Bills and don't win a single game since then. Pretty comedic. Then Sunday Night Football, it's a banger. Absolute banger. Buccaneers and Rams. And I don't know, man. It's this Buccaneers team, their offense is a shootout machine, but their defense gives up so many points. So I do need to pick upsets this week. So I am going to go. My upset of the week is Buccaneers over the Rams. Rams have been on a killing spree. And I think at home, Sunday Night Football, it's just working too much in their favor. Going to go with the Buccaneers here, and fingers crossed, especially if Bucky Irving's back, definitely going to ride with them. And then Monday Night Football, ladies and gentlemen, Panthers and 49ers. My new fantasy QB is Brock Purdy because I traded him in my deal. Why? Because I just don't care anymore. I am playing Christian McCaffrey, which is unfortunate, but I do have George Kittle in the league, so I'll be rooting for him. Also, just don't really see the Panthers beating the 49ers whatsoever. That is just not a reality I think we live in. So I'm going to be going with the 49ers to get it done, and that will be my official predictions for week number, I guess my quick picks instead of official predictions. Official predictions is what I do for UFC, but, you know, I'll say for this one, these are my week 12 quick picks, and those are who you should all bet on or go with when you're looking at your picks. So with that, we will move away from the NFL, and we will move back into the UFC as I have my UFC Qatar predictions here. We got a lot of fights to go over. Let's not waste any time. Let's dive right on into it. Kicking off this weekend's card, we'll be heading to the heavyweight division. That's right. We have new heavyweights coming over to the UFC. We will be having the debuts of Marik Bujzilla Bujo and Denzel Luke Fox Freeman. Yeah, what fun names we have here. Marik is 6-0. Denzel is 6-1. 6'4 to 6'1. Marik has 3 inches in height. They both have a 77 inch reach. Orthodox stance for Marik, southpaw for Denzel Freeman. Marik Bujo is the plus 165 underdog coming into his debut. 32 years old, he fights out of Poland. All 6 of his victories have came by stoppage in round 1. Funny enough, he was actually supposed to fight a guy named Jose Luis, but he pulled out. So, Marik Bujo, 3 KOs and 3 subs. His one picture on Tapeology showed him in a gi or something, so he's either doing some form of Taekwondo or he was doing Jiu-Jitsu. Whatever fit he had on was interesting, but, you know, he has some height, he has something going from there. He looks like a good old boy from Poland, and we'll see how he performs when he takes on Denzel Luke Fox Freeman. Wait, what does Luke Fox even mean? I don't even know, but Luke Freeman, or Denzel Freeman, is 34 years old from Colorado. He's currently on a little 2-fight winning streak, and out of his 6 wins, he has 4 KOs and 1 sub. He actually trains at the same gym as Neil Magny and Tishan Hakwell Pennington. funny enough. He's also fought in the PFL and the LFA. So Denzel has some experience, but I am going to be going with Mariq Bujo. He fights from that region. He's an underdog. He's a bit younger. He has some height. And honestly, I could care less who wins as long as one of them is a good prospect. So best of luck to Mariq Bujo. I hope you win because you are super, super fun. Next up, we have Nicholas Dalby taking on Saeed Izakgakmaev. Holy cow, what a name we got on this fella. Nicholas Danish Dynamite Dalby is 23-6 with a draw and 2 no contests. Saeed Izakgakmaev, 22-2. Wow. 1 inch in height for Saeed, and they both have a 74-inch reach and both stand in the orthodox fighting position. Izakgakmaev in his debut here is a -390 favorite against the 41-year-old +280 underdog Nicholas Dalby. The 31-year-old Saeed is from Russia, currently on a 5-fight win streak. Out of his 22 wins, he has 17 finishes, 4 KOs, and 13 subs. Of his 2 defeats, he's only ever been submitted once. Izakgakmaev has gone 3-0 in 1 championship, and his last MMA fight was in 2022. Now, he did pick up, I believe it was either a kickboxing or a grappling win in 2025, but yes, his last MMA fight was in the year of 2022. Though we will have to see if there's a layoff or, you know, kind of like some ring rust when Saeed gets in the octagon with Nicholas Dalby. Nicholas, of course, from Denmark. He's older, 11 of his 23 wins by finish, 7 KOs, 4 subs. Hey, we've seen Nicholas fight a time or two. Funny enough, out of his entire career, he's never been finished up until his last fight in April, which is never really a good sign. He's gone 7-5 with a drawn and no contest in the UFC, so he's kind of hit the like quad on that. No one getting all the no contest and draw and the wins and some losses. But yeah, Dalby had been on an absolute tear until 2024 when he ran into a split decision against Renat Fakhretdinov. Did look impressive there. People debate if he had actually lost that. It had snapped his 4-fight winning streak. And then he came back in April this year and fought Randy Brown. And he was beating Randy Brown when he was whooping Randy Brown's butt, and he was looking good in round one and gets in the round two and gets face plant knocked out in one of the best knockouts of the entire year of 2025. So Dalby, you know, he took some time off. You know, he took took 7 months off, but we'll see how it helps him when he comes back against this guy in Saeed Izakgakmaev. So they both have their ups. They both have their downs. I will say, Dalby, the fact he joined the UFC when he was like 32 and he's still going hard at 41, props to him. But when I got 22-2 guy from Russia coming in, I'm going to go with Izakgakmaev here. But it would be kind of cool to see Dalby turn back the clock one last time, Dalby, throwing it old school to get the victory. And I'm an optimist, but I'm not that optimist. So I am going to go with Izakgakmaev. Next up, we head to the men's lightweight division. Lightweight division next is where we're at as Nurullo the Tajik Eagle Aliyev takes on Shamrock. What a fun name, Shamrock. Nurullo Aliyev is 10-0. Shamrock is 12-1-1. 5'11 to 5'10, 1 inch in height for Shem. He also has an inch in reach. He fights southpaw. Nurullo Aliyev fights orthodox. Nurullo is a -340 favorite against the debuting Shamrock. Nurullo, the 24-year-old, is from Tajikistan and of his 10 wins, has 2 KOs. Got a KO in 2022 on the Contender Series, which earned him a contract. He would then win a majority decision in February of 2023 against Rafael Alves. He would then fight once earlier this year against Joe Selecki, marking him 2-0 in the UFC. So, Nurullo, I've watched him fight. Both of his fights, I will say, he's nothing really special from what I've seen so far. He's kind of a grappling machine. He also kind of lost round three when he fought Joe Selecki, who was absolutely washed. So there's a lot of room for concern with Nurullo Aliyev, but he is fighting in home turf in a sense, and he's taken on the debuting Shamrock. Shamrock is a +250 underdog. He is 32 years old from Dublin. He's currently on a 6-fight win streak, and he does train at the same gym as Paddy the Batty Pimlet. 11 of his 12 wins are by finish, 2 KOs and 9 subs. His last win came in May. If I'm ever looking at underdogs and what I'm liking here, I got Shamrock, baby. There's just something about him. He's fought in some tough guys. He trains at, I think, Next Gen Liverpool or Next Gen MMA, whichever, or Next Gen MMA Liverpool, whatever it is, where Paddy Pimblett trains. So he has trained with really high-level people out there. But I'm liking what I've seen from Shamrock Nerullo. I've watched both of his UFC fights. They were both kind of moments where you're like, you know, he's winning with the grappling, but he's not really going for the finish. And I think if Shamrock can get him in a position, get him out of there, this is a great underdog pick to start the card. That's right. Two of our first three fights, we are going with an underdog. Moving up to middleweight, where I thought we were going next, but this fight is right above this one, as Ishmael Nurudeev will be taking on Man of Steel, Ryan Loader. Ishmael Nurudeev coming in, minus 185 favorite. Ryan Loader, the plus 145 underdog. Nurudeev is 24-8. Ryan Loader, 8-2. 4 inches in height for Ryan Loader, 6'2 to 5'10. He also has 2 inches in reach. He fights southpaw. Ishmael fights orthodox. We'll start off with the underdog, Ryan Loader. Ryan Loader is 34 years old from California. Of his 8 wins, he has 5 knockouts. And he actually won, I think it was the last season. Two seasons ago, he won the Ultimate Fighter, beat Robert Valentine with a round 2 TKO. He then took on Azamat Bekov in his debut and was knocked out in just over 2.5 minutes. So Ryan Loader, grappling machine, you know, his chin clearly isn't the best against Azamat Bekov. We'll see how he does against a very similar, you know, opponent here in Ishmael Nurudeev. Ishmael has almost triple his experience despite being 5 years younger at 29. He hails from Morocco, and 18 of those 24 wins are by finish, 12 KOs and 6 subs. Of his 8 defeats, he's only ever been finished 4 times. All of that was pre-UFC. He's been with the UFC, you know, kind of on and off. He had a little stint in 2019 and 2020 going 2-2, including a loss to Sean Brady, all by decision. He would come back in 2024 to beat Bruno Silva by decision, and then his lone fight in this year against June Park, he lost a unanimous decision. Like what I've seen so far between these two, more so from Ishmael Nurudeev. He's got the hometown advantage in Morocco. If he can defend the takedowns from Ryan Loader, he'll have some success. And honestly, Ryan Loader, to me, is kind of one of the worst winners of the Ultimate Fighter. I'm just being honest. Next up, we have a bantamweight matchup, which I have no idea why we didn't just sneak this on. I know the main card's loaded, but I mean, is there no way we could have not snuck this on the main card? Behzad the Tehran Warrior Almakan will be taking on El Conquistador Alexander Topuric. Can I just lock in my pick now? Just going to tell you all right now, I'm going to pick Alexander Topuria, but I want you all to know is that this fight should not be happening where they're at in their career. Because Behzad Almakan is an absolute savage, and this will be no easy fight for Topuria. I mean, Bekov 12-2, Topuria 6-1, double their fights. Both men are 5'7", both men fight orthodox, both men have a 68-inch reach. Both men are just as similar as it gets. 29 years old for Topuria, of course, from Spain. He's riding a 4-fight win streak. Of those 6 wins, 5 finishes. Of course, the older brother of the great Ilia Topuria. He sacrificed some of his prime years of his fighting career to help his brother chase his dreams. As for Behzad Almakan, 28 years old from Kazakhstan. 11 of his 12 wins by finish, with including 10 knockouts and 1 sub. Had a very short notice and unfortunate debut against Umar Nurmagomedov, where he dropped him with the first punch and then proceeded to get controlled for 11 and a half minutes. Crazy how that works. He would come back in May and knock out Brad Katona in a minute, which I absolutely loved, but I am going to go with Alexander Topuria here. However, both men are minus 115, so whoever ends up becoming the underdog here, if any, go with them. That's my best bet prediction for you guys. Next up, we got a little light heavyweight action as Abdulrahman Yakyayev, the Hunter, takes on Rafael the Lion Sequeira. I have never seen someone be this fed to someone before. That's how Rafael Sequeira is with being fed to Abdulrahman Yakyayev. Y'all remember the scene in Jurassic World where they lower the, you know, sheep or goat in the cage and the T-Rex or whatever comes out and eats it, and, you know, you're just like, oh my gosh, why would they do that? Well, that's literally this. Just to let you know, Abdulrahman Yakyayev, you know, size-wise, he's sort of pretty similar, all right? But he's 7-0. Abdulrahman Yakyayev is 24 years old in his prime. He's a minus 1,000 favorite. He's from Turkey. 6 of his 7 wins are by finish. All of those finishes have came in round 1. He's coming off a 30-second TKO on August 26 on the Contender Series. And who are they having him fight? Someone high level, right? Absolutely not. They're having him fight 35-year-old plus 560 underdog from Brazil, Rafael Sequeira. Now, he does train in the same gym as Halton Almeida, so trains at a Jim as a top 10 heavyweight. That's always fun to see. 8 KOs and 2 subs give him 10 of his 11 wins by finish, which is very exciting. His last win, however, was April of 2024. He debuted in October, knocked out in 51 seconds. Came back in February this year, knocked out in 2 minutes. Then came back in August of this year, fought Julius Walker, if anything, survived until the bell. So Abdurakhman Yankayev is going to do horrendous things to him. I don't even really want to talk about it. Rakhmonov is going to violate this man. So prayers up for Rafael Sequeira, because Yankayev is going to take him out as the 11-year younger favorite. Next up, we head to the men's flyweight division. This one's exciting, as the number 11th ranked Tagir Ulembekov will welcome back to the UFC Kyoichi Horiguchi. If you aren't aware who Kyoichi Horiguchi is, you need to become accustomed to this man, because he is a former double champion in Rizin and in Bellator, and he used to fight in the UFC. That's right, Kyoichi Horiguchi was actually a mainstay for 3 years, from 2013 to 2016, and fought Demetrius Johnson and only lost with a second left in the fifth round. He's a great fighter. He's 34-5, and, you know, it's crazy. He's working his way back to the UFC, and he's only a year older than Tagir Ulembekov, funny enough. So coming in, he is the underdog at plus 145. Tagir at minus 190 is the favorite. Looking at their size difference here, not too much, you know, 3 inches in height for Tagir, 7 inches in reach. He fights southpaw. Kyoichi is orthodox, so kind of just a give and take. We can start with Kyoichi here. Kyoichi from Japan, but now trains in Florida. Currently on a little 5-fight winning streak at this point in his career. Trains at American Top Team. 20 of his 34 wins are by finish, 15 KOs and 5 subs. And 3 of his 5 defeats have came by finish. I believe 1 by submission, 2 by knockout, if I'm not mistaken. He went 14-1 in Rizin, and his last fight was in 2024. So finally getting a fight in. I believe it was in December that he won his last matchup. But yeah, so far stellar in the UFC. He went 7-1. Only loss was to the greatest flyweight of all time, Demetrius Johnson. So not too shabby. We'll see how he does against Tagir Ulembekov, who is currently ranked, as I mentioned, at number 11. Tagir, 34 years old, from Russia. He is part of the Khabib clan. Currently riding a little 4-fight winning streak. 1 KO and 8 subs give him 9 of his 17 wins by finish. Good for him. Only loss in the UFC was in 2022. He lost the decision to Tim Elliott. Other than that, picked up some okay wins. This will be his 3rd fight in the year. But if I'm being honest, like, he's fought in grapplers his last 2 times out. Clayton Carpenter and Azat Maksimyan has kind of showed some holes in his game. So I'm actually going to go with Kyoichi Horiguchi. Come back. Get it done. I think if anything, you're going to see Tagir win by grappling. And I just don't know what version of Kyoichi Horiguchi we're going to get. I understand he's 35 and at flyweight, that's kind of the age you see a turn for the, turns for the worst just sounds negative. It's not what I mean, but just like you see a decline in their, you know, superiority, you know, with Pantoja, with Moreno, they're going to enter that age bracket and you'll start to see maybe signs of slowing. But we'll see how Kyoichi Horiguchi can do. I am going to predict him to win just because Tagir just had some shaky wins against Clayton Carpenter and Azat Maksimyan. Yeah, he did enough, but they were close when they really shouldn't have been close whatsoever. So we'll see what happens there, but should be good. With that, we'll be diving into the main card, I believe. And, you know, I'm interested. The bout order could swap around a bit, but as of right now, this is the first fight on the main card. Featherweight division, as Bogdan the Unleashed Grodd takes on the debuting Luke Riley. Luke Riley, minus 265, making his debut, is 11-0, and of course trains at the same gym as Paddy Pimblett. Also the same gym as our boy, Shamrock. So some teammates on the card. For Bogdan Grodd, he's the plus 200 underdog. 15-3 for him. Luke Riley at 11-0 is 26 years old from England. He has 8 of his 11 wins by knockout. Very impressive. His last win came in March, funny enough, for Bogdan Grodd. Austria is his home nation, 30 years old. 12 of his 15 wins are by finish. And, you know, he's gone 1-1 in the UFC. Debuted in February, knocking out Lucas Alexander. Weird to think he debuted this year. Really is. Fought twice in the Contender Series, funny enough. And we took out Muhammad Naimov in June, just kind of faltered and showed nothing. Like, really was just kind of choked when he had a decent opportunity to get a big win. So this is an easy pick for me with Luke Riley. I love the newbies on this card. Obviously, we're getting a new heavyweight. Obviously, Gakhamov against Dalby is going to be new. Shamrock is new. You're also seeing Kauchi Horiguchi return, in a sense. Abdulrahman Yakaev make his debut. And as for Luke Riley, this is a very highly touted prospect, especially in the men's featherweight division, where we really could use some nice prospects coming up. And I know for the fact the UFC really wants him to win, especially if him and Shamrock, if we could get some wins from the Paddy Pimblett gym, that would be phenomenal for a future London card. So going to go with Luke Riley here. Probably just going to go with a KO here. Really think so. Maybe round two, maybe round three, getting the KO. We'll have to see, but should be exciting to say the least. With that, we get into the big five, if you want to call it that. I don't even know if it really is the big five, but first up, heavyweight division, and it was supposed to be Sergey Spivak against Shamil Gaziev, but now it is Walter Cortes Acosta against Shamil Gaziev. And like I said before, it is so crazy that Walter Cortes Acosta, who's ranked number 6, is fighting down on short notice against Shamil Gaziev. Like, he doesn't have to. Waldo could get a fight with Curtis Blaydes next if he wanted, and now he's getting a fight with Walter Cortes Acosta. But just going to talk about Shamil Gaziev here for a second. Shamil Gaziev, probably going to be the underdog now, but was the favorite. He's 35 years old from Baran. 12 of his 14 wins are by finish. Knockout machine with 9. He was supposed to fight in May. He was also supposed to fight in June, both against Sergey Spivak. And for the third time, Spivak has pulled out yet again. So far, Shamil has gone 3-1 in the UFC. Recently got a knockout in February over Thomas Peterson. His only career loss was a main event loss to Jarzinho Rozenstruik, who beat him up so badly he had a cut and could not continue. So I'll be very interested to see where we go from here with Shamil Gaziev. I absolutely love him. He's such a meme fighter in the community, which just makes it so fun. So I'll be rooting for him easily. He is going to be my prediction, but that's because I'm a Walter Cortes Acosta hater for some reason, which I shouldn't be, especially since this man is having his 5th fight in 2025. He is the modern day Kevin Holland. I mean, come on. Came in March, getting a win against Ryan Spann, then fought in June, defeating Sergey Spivak, then fought Sergey Pavlovich, lost, and recently in November, and that's right, not even talking, about 19 days ago, knocked out Ante Delage. So I am going to go with Shamil Gaziev just because Shamil Gaziev is one of my favorite fighters. He's one of my boys, and I've loved him even before he was a little meme. You just can't get enough of Shamil Gaziev. But Walter Cortes Acosta should be the favorite if he is not already. This guy just has, you know, too much momentum this year to not be the favorite for this contest. So going to be going with Shamil Gaziev, going to go by knockout. But yeah, keep your eyes on none other than Walter Cortes Acosta. The Salsa Boy is a dangerous, dangerous man. Then flyweight action, this, you know, bout is being bounced around a lot, but as of right now is on the main card. We head there again, and this time we have top 10 action as the number 7th ranked Alex Perez takes on the number 8th ranked Asu Almabayev. Both guys desperately in need of a win, really are. Like, this is must win for both guys. Perez plus 160 underdog, Asu coming in minus 210 favorite. 25-9 record for Perez, 22-3 for Asu. I'm seeing 2 inches in height for Perez. That's just about it. Both men have the same reach. Both men have the same stance. It's all going to come down to striker versus grappler. So coming in, Alex Perez, 33 years old from California. 13 of his 25 wins are by finish, 6 KOs and 7 subs. Of his 9 losses, 7 by finish. 5 times he's been KO'd, twice he's been submitted. He was actually supposed to fight Steve Hersig August 9th. He unfortunately had to pull out of that. And actually, Steve Hersig ended up fighting Ode Osborne, so it worked out. But this man has had a just insane 14 canceled UFC fights. Dude just can. I mean, it's awful. And since 2020, I kid you not, it's been like 12 of them or something. But, you know, at one point, Alex Perez was coming in on a 3-fight win streak. He had been 7-1 in the UFC, multiple round one finishes, fought Figueiredo for the belt. I still remember it was when I was really just getting into UFC and get submitted in round one. Okay. Comes back 2 years later in July of 2022, gets submitted by Alexander Mattola. Okay, benefit of the doubt. All right. March of 2024, drops a just boring grappling decision to Mohamed Mokaev. Okay, Mohamed Mokaev's a really good prospect. Then April 2024, for some reason, gets a main event, coming off of 3 straight losses, knocks out Matthias Nicolau, absolute dog. Then fought in June of 2024 in a main event, and Tatsuya Taira dominates him, actually ends up injuring him with a little injury TKO, and he hasn't fought since. So Alex Perez is coming in off a long layoff. He has been so inactive. He is literally known as one of the most inactive fighters. And he's taking on a guy in Aslam Abayev who has been trying everything he can to, you know, stay active. And, you know, it's been tricky. It's been tough. But he takes opportunities and he doesn't let them pass by. He is 31 years old from Kazakhstan. 3 KOs and 9 subs. Give him 12 of his 22 wins by finish. And of his 3 defeats, he's been finished twice. Aslam. So far, pretty good. In the UFC, he's 5-1. Only loss was a short-notice main event to Manel Cape when he TKO'd him in round number 3. And he picked up a massive win in July over Jose Ochoa. I mean, that fight was slipping away from him. It really was. And little did we know is that Asu, when you think he's all out, he pulls it up in the tank. And he was having guillotines jumped on him, and he was overcoming it. And was it an impressive win? No, but it was a win nonetheless. And I think that's going to continue. I am going to pick Aslam Abayev to get the victory yet again. Like him. I like the guy. You know, he doesn't do anything too entertaining, but there's just something about him. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's his face. Maybe it's his fun little hat. Maybe it's the region he's from. I like some of the Kazakhstan fighters. But, hey, Kazakhstani here in Aslam Almabayev, Kazakhstani in Behzad Almakan. So we'll see who can get it done for old Kazakhstan. With that, getting into our final four matchups of the evening. First up, very weird one here. Very weird one. Welterweight division. As Jack the Joker Hermanson, that's right, Jack Hermanson, that's right, you remember him? Remember him? Yeah, he's been fought in so long. Taking on Mike Tebek Oralbay. What a random fight, and I love it. I absolutely do. Jack Hermanson is 24-9. Mike Tebek is 14-2-1. Jack Hermanson, only 3 inches taller and only has 3 inches in reach. They both fight in the orthodox fighting position. One key here, Jack Hermanson coming in is 37, Oralbay is 27. Jack Hermanson is the plus 165 underdog here. Born in Sweden, but now says he trains and fights out of Norway. 10 KOs and 7 subs give him 17 of 24 wins by finish. Fun fact, he hasn't gotten a finish in 5 freaking years. Jack Hermanson has also been finished in 6 of his 9 losses, 4 by KO, 2 by sub, and he's gone 11-7 in the UFC. He is legit gone win-loss since September of 2019. Before that, he had been on an absolute 4-fight winning streak tear. He had gone 7-2 before that, and then ran into Jerry Cannonier, who knocked him out. But then he heel-hooked Kevin Gastelum. Then he lost the fight the night to Marvin Vettori. Then he became the second man to defeat Edmund Shabazian. Then he lost a boring main event to Sean Strickland. Then he won a boring co-main event against Chris Curtis. Then he was TKO'd on short notice by Rowan Dolidze. Then he had a great comeback, boring decision win over Joe Pyfer. Then he decided to take a year and a half off, and Greg Rodriguez flatlined him earlier in June. So I do not like how soon Jack Hermanson's return is here. I mean, this guy was knocked out cold to end June, and not even 5 months later, he's back. I don't really know how that's going to fare for him, especially against a hungry, active fighter like Mike Tebek Oralbay. Mike Tebek is 27 years old from Kyrgyzstan. 12 of his 14 wins are by finish, 6 KOs and 6 subs. And so far, dude's been an absolute beauty. In the UFC, submitted Yoris Medic in his debut, short notice neck crank, then fought Elvis Brenner in Brazil and whooped his butt, then had one of the craziest fights I've seen against Matheus Rebecca. I mean, it was a medieval war fight. It was historic. Show your kids that fight. It was that amazing. I just can never get enough of that fight. And then came back in June and submitted Tofik Musaev in just dominant, clear-cut fashion. Wasn't even close. Wasn't even close in the slightest. I mean, it was, you know, Tofik Musaev, clearly not the best fighter, is what I'll say in that regard. But yeah, in terms of this matchup here, Mike Tebek Oralbay, this dude, he's been on a roll. I've liked what I've seen, and I don't think he's going to slow here, especially, and you know, he got a win over in Azerbaijan. I think fighting here in Qatar shouldn't be too different for him. Give me Mike Tebek Oralbay over Jack Hermanson, and we're actually going to go with a round one submission. Next up, third to last fight of the evening, we head to the men's light heavyweight division as the number 14th ranked Alonzo Menifield takes on the number 9 ranked Volkan Ozdemir, one of the final shots of the career for Alonzo Menifield. I don't think people realize Alonzo Menifield is do or die here. It really is. If he doesn't win this, he will never make it in the rankings for the UFC. Volkan, 20-8, no time is the nickname, minus 250 favorite, 36 years old, Switzerland. Alonzo, atomic. Menifield, 17-5-1, he is 38 from Texas. He is, of course, the plus 190 underdog. So, looking at the number 9 ranked, Volkan Ozdemir. He has 13 KOs and 2 subs, giving him 15 of 20 wins by finish. Four of his eight defeats, he's been finished in. 2 KOs, 2 subs. And he's gone 8-7 in the UFC. So, if he loses this, he'll be a perfect 500, which would be kind of funny. Volkan Ozdemir, been with the UFC since 2017. He, of course, picked up 3 wins, which earned him a title shot, where he was destroyed by Daniel Cormier. He would then fight Anthony Smith in a main event, where he would get destroyed. He would then lose a split decision to Dominic Reyes. Following 2 wins in 2019, he would start 2020 off having to face the debuting Jiří Procházka. He would then take on a man a year later in October 2021. Who was it? It was former light heavyweight champion Magomed Ankalaev. But then he beat Paul Craig, and then he lost to Nikita Krylov. Then, 2023 and 2024 treated him somewhat kind. Round 1 submission to Bogdan Guskov, round 1 knockout of Johnny Walker. But then he ended November losing a decision to Carlos Ulberg. But don't worry, Carlos Ulberg is an absolute savage, an absolute animal, and you know that's not too bad of a loss to have on the record. So Volkan is coming in with a loss, but hey, happens to the best of us. We'll see how he does. He takes on the 14th ranked Alonzo Menafield. Alonzo has 9 KOs and 3 subs, giving him, or actually is it 4 subs? Yeah, 4 subs I think it is. 13 of his 17 wins by finish. Of his 5 defeats, he's been KO'd 3 times. He's gone 10-5-1 in the UFC. Good for him. And we'll see how he does here. He's on a little 2-fight winning streak. His third fight coming in 2025. Had a fight of the night win against Julius Walker and became the first man ever to defeat Omar Sy. Last few losses in the UFC, Azamat Mirzakhanov and Carlos Ulberg, both in 2024. So not too shabby. The years kind of just come and go, and it appears 2022, on year for him, 2023, on year for him, 2024, off year, 2025. It's been an on year so far, and you know what? I'd rather just go out on my shield than go against him. So I am going to pick our boy one last time, Alonzo Menafield. I really hope he gets it done. I'll really be rooting for Alonzo Menafield. He wound up in EA Sports UFC 5 this year. He's really been grinding, giving him tough opponents, and I think if there's ever a time to jump into the top 10, it's here against the Volkan Ozdemir, who's been inactive for a year and just, you know, is kind of entering the latter stages of his career. So we're going to go with Alonzo Menafield, and let's go risky here with a little round 1 knockout. Next up, the co-main event of the evening, as the number 2 ranked Bilal Muhammad takes on the number 6 ranked Ian Garry. It's been a weird fight week. It really has. If no one saw what Bilal Muhammad said at one of the press conferences, it was one of the weirdest things I've ever heard a fighter say, and I've heard a lot of weird things, but he basically, not verbatim, said, "I have a 17-year-old I train with at my gym who just kicks, you know, he fights hard and kicks my ass, and I feel like Jeffrey Epstein with them, almost like I'm taking his powers as his youth." And you may be like, well, what the frick you're saying, Zach? Jeffrey Epstein? I kid you not. It's been all over social media. No one can figure out what could have ever possessed Bilal Muhammad to say it. I don't know if his PR team said, you need to say something ridiculous so people talk about you. That has to be the only case, because I have no idea what would possess a human to say that. Like, it was so weird. But will that be the only thing contributing to the fact I'm definitely not picking him this weekend? No. It also contributes to the fact I think Ian Machado Garry is a better overall fighter. I think Bilal is done. I think Bilal Muhammad on top has reached his core. It really has. But we'll go through this here. Bilal is 37. Ian Garry, 28. Ian Garry is the minus 190 favorite to the plus 150 underdog of Bilal. Bilal Muhammad, 24-4 with a no contest. Ian Machado Garry, 16-1. 4 inches in height for Garry and 2 inches in reach. For Bilal Muhammad, you know, he had his time. He's 37 years old from Chicago. 6 of his 24 wins are by finish. That's right. This man has a, if we can do some math here, 25% finish rate, which is really, really bad. He's gone 15-4 with a no contest in the UFC, meaning this will be his 21st fight in the UFC. And he's, of course, coming off a decision loss to Jack Del Malle. And that was entertaining. He looked good, but seeing how he performed against JDM and seeing how Islam did just shows the levels to MMA, really. Bilal Muhammad is oddly one of the greatest welterweight fighters of all time. I mean, it's really weird. He holds wins over Leon Edwards, Gilbert Burns, Sean Brady, Vicente Luque, Damian Maia, Wonderboy Thompson. It's kind of crazy when you actually think about it, but hey, good stuff, Bilal. You've had your time. Time to move along, because it's time for Ian Machado Gary. Ian Gary, of course, from Ireland. 8 of those 16 wins by finish, 7 KOs and 1 sub. He's got 9-1 in the UFC. This man debuted on the same card as Alex Pereira and never looked back. The knockouts of Song Kinnan and Daniel Rodriguez are awesome. His wins over Neil Magny, Jeff Neal, and Michael Page have all seemed to age well. Yeah, his only decision loss was in December of 2024 to Shavkat Rakhmonov in a short-notice co-main event. Last time out, he fought Carlos Prates and did pretty good. Beat him down through the first three rounds. Might have maybe won round four and, you know, may have lost round five, but hey, it's how it goes. I do think Ian Gary is going to get this done, jump up to number two. We just saw Carlos Prates leapfrog him. I think it only makes sense that he ends up leapfrogging Shavkat, who he has beaten, who had beaten him previously. So Ian Gary over Bilal Muhammad, decision. I don't know if it's five rounds. I think it's only going to be three, but if it is, I still favor Ian Gary over Bilal Muhammad, just because I'm not a Bilal Muhammad fan. I've never predicted a Bilal Muhammad fight right. I never have. It's one of my worst skills that I have. So maybe don't trust me when I'm predicting this fight. But getting into our main event, you know, it's kind of like flip-flopping. Like, should this be a main event? Should Bilal and Ian Gary be the main event? But this is your official main event, ladies and gentlemen. In the lightweight division, you have the number 14 pound-for-pound fighter, the number one contender, Armin Sarukian, taking on the number 6 ranked Dan the Hangman Hooker. 22-3 for Armin, 24-12 for Dan Hooker. Other professional records: a notable 5 inches in height for Dan Hooker and 3 inches in reach. He fights switch stance and UFC orthodox from Armin Sarukian. Armin is the minus 440 favorite. Dan Hooker, a plus 310 underdog. Yeah. Armin Sarukian, 29 years old, from Armenia and Russia up in that region. 14 of his 22 wins are by finish, 9 KOs and 5 subs. He went 3-0 in grappling this year. His last MMA fight, UFC 300. That is right. The last time he fought was April of 2024. He was actually supposed to fight for the belt at UFC 311, but for some reason, I don't know if he couldn't make weight, if he got injured, but it went to Renato Moicano, and he got passed up the rest of the year. So it's been a while since we've seen the rich Armenian Armin fight, but Armin's an absolute dog. Only losses are Fight of the Nights to Islam Makhachev and Matheus Gamrot. As of late, 4-fight winning streak. Wins over Benil Dariush and Charles Oliveira. He kind of knocked out Benil Dariush before it started becoming the cool thing to do. And of course, he beat Charles Oliveira, which not every single human being on the earth can say. So, Armin Sarukian, back for more. He's a grappler. He's a striker. He's been out for a year and a half, so tough to say what we're going to see. But all I do know is the man he's fighting, Dan Hooker, has been off just as long. Dan Hooker, 35 years old, from New Zealand, has been in his fair share of main events, and there's one commonality. They're all bangers, is what I'll say. 11 KOs and 7 subs give him 18 of 24 wins by finish, and of his 12 defeats, he's been finished 6 times. He's gone 14-8 in the UFC, and he was actually supposed to fight Justin Gaethje at UFC 313, so both of these guys supposed to fight high-level people earlier the year. Stuff ended up happening. Dan Hooker is on a 3-fight winning streak, coming off of one of the greatest fights of 2024 against Matheus Gamrot. And I think this fight is really even. I really do, but I it's tough to say what we're going to see. I really just feel like with the opponents Dan Hooker's been fighting compared to Armin, Armin's going to fight a very specific style, which I think just is not favorable to Dan Hooker whatsoever. I think Armin's going to dominate on the ground, maybe get some ground and pound as well. I think where Dan Hooker could catch him would be reversing, landing some top control ground and pound, or even hitting him with the knee up the middle, going for a little 1-2. So I'm going to go with Armin Sarukian to get the job done. It's weird. It's like I don't feel like he'll go the distance, but I also have a hard time seeing him get the finish. So I am going to go with Armin to get the finish, but under which way? Knockout, if anything, but, you know, still up in the air, I'll say. So I'm going to go with Armin to defeat Dan Hooker. But ladies and gentlemen, that's all I have for today. Those were UFC Qatar predictions. It's going to be a good card. I can tell it's going to be a really fun card. So we'll see if this actually uploads. If it doesn't, I'm going to just upload it at some point because I could care less when it gets uploaded. Just know that it's recorded right now as of 11/20/25 at 9:51 p.m. Because if my storage is full, I don't understand why. It said I'm at 1,024% over capacity. I don't know if like I had a payment going through for Gigabytes and just like cancel or something. I don't know. So we'll have to see. But ladies and gentlemen, that's all I have for today's episode. Let me know who you guys are going with for the NFL this week and for UFC Qatar. And what you want to see for the end of the year on the Surprise Jab podcast, because as of right now, I have unfortunately not been delivering up to my end with all the surprises and with all the, you know, excitement, but it's tough. It really is. I have essentially less than 2 hours free time every night, and realistically, I need to go to bed in 8 minutes, which is not looking possible. So with that, I'll bid you all adieu, and I think you know what I'm about to say right now. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab podcast.